A woman in Milwaukee who posted all of this on her Facebook account. I'm handing out full-size candy bars per usual, but I'm also putting a potato in the bowl just to see what happens. We've had multiple parents say their kids have been clamoring for potatoes. We have given out 44 potatoes. A group of teens in steampunk outfits came by. Every teen is yelling about the potatoes. Amazing. They're all yelling, "Potato gang!" at each other.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin! Happy Friday! Are we all surviving?
We're surviving.
Are we all ready for Tuesday to be here and those campaign ads to stop? Oof. Jane Mettner, how are you doing this morning?
I am great. Just want to remind folks, with that little open that we did about the potato gang that you talked about yesterday, which is so hilarious.
I got some texts about it.
Oh, did you?
Louis Friedland was like, that was a very funny segment. I was like, thanks, Lou.
It was priceless. So we put that in our best of. We have best ofs now that run on the weekends.
Yes.
So if you missed it, you can catch it tomorrow. You can also catch it on asgoeswisconsin.com.
That's true.
Right. There's a blog there. And listen to the potato gang. It's worth the laughs.
Joseph Heckey, if you had to choose between a raw potato and a full-size candy bar, what would you pick?
Full-size candy bar.
Yeah,
I'm flashing back to a wedding I went to, a buddy of mine I grew up with. Maybe he's listening today. I'm not going to name him and embarrass him. But it's family tradition at the wedding that the groom has to take a bite out of a raw potato. And he did it like a champ.
Like an apple.
Yeah, just like an apple.
Just like an apple.
Maybe this is more prevalent than I knew.
Maybe there's a potato gang. Like, this is an underbelly of Milwaukee culture that we just never knew about, right? So, all right. Well, with that,
Guess who's back?
Back again.
That's right.
Joseph Heckey is here for at least the first hour. We may keep you around if things keep rolling, because God knows it feels like there's a lot to talk about. But
I'll blink twice on the live stream if I'm being held against my will.
Yes, exactly. So pay attention to that. But Joseph Heckey, Democratic campaign veteran and strategist, and fresh off Steve Scafidi up front. You're doing the media tour today. Are you talked out yet? Are you still on fire?
I'm just getting warmed up. Yeah, let's do it. Let's go.
So where should we start? I feel like there's a lot of news going into this last Friday before the election. So should we start with what happened in Milwaukee yesterday?
Probably. We have some additional news this morning.
Yes.
The Milwaukee County District Attorney has brought charges, as I understand it, a couple of misdemeanors, a felony charge against an official with the Milwaukee Elections Commission who messed around, and now she's going to find out.
So the background here, I think this broke while we were on air yesterday, and I had seen, because it was as a couple days prior to that, Janelle Branchon reported that she had received military absentee ballots at her home address.
Three different names, all with Holly in them.
And she obviously, Janelle Branchon being one of the people, one of the state representatives who has been on the side of looking into questioning 2020's election results. And so she, of course, immediately reported this, was like, let's get to the bottom of what happened. So it turns out a Milwaukee election official, Kimberly Zapata, had requested these military absentee ballots and sent them to Branchon's house for the purpose of showing that it can be done. So it seems similar to the vein of what happened in Racine earlier this year, of someone showing that these things can happen, although both times it being caught and stopped before anyone actually voted illegally.
Correct. I also think there's a big difference in that in Racine, the Republican, you know, MAGA sheriff down there didn't want to bring charges.
Yeah.
So the State Department of Justice, under the leadership of Democrat Attorney General Josh Call, had to charge that gentleman. In this case, you have the Democratic mayor of the city of Milwaukee immediately saying, that's it, you're fired. And today, the Democratic District Attorney of Milwaukee saying, we are charging you for these offenses. So I just want people to remember that for all of the nonsense you hear from Republicans about being tough on crime and we should be worried about our elections, it is Democrats who are ensuring accountability in our election system.
And he did not mince words, he being Cavalier Johnson, mayor of Milwaukee. And he said, I don't think we have the clip, so I'm just going to read it. The city of Milwaukee has removed the deputy director of our election commission following stunning information about allegations against her. I was told yesterday that she apparently sought fictitious military ballots from a state election website and had those ballots directed to a state representative. I will not accept, I will not tolerate, and I will certainly not defend any misrepresentation by a city official involved in elections. It does not matter that this might have not might have been an effort to expose a vulnerability that state law created. It does not matter that this alleged crime did not take place at work. It does not matter that the city of Milwaukee ballots were not part of this, nor does it matter that there was no attempt to vote illegally or tamper with election results. This has every appearance of being an egregious, blatant violation of trust, and this matter is now in the hands of law enforcement. And it goes on, but like he was like, this, we are putting an end to this. She is fired. And what's wild to me is when you read the report that Journal Sentinel, when they covered this, she basically said that she felt overwhelmed due to the threats of violence the election commission was receiving, in addition to the constant daily harassment and accusations of lying and hiding things. She stated she wanted the truth to come out so they could focus on the actual problems, which feels like this was not the way. If you were trying to make shift the attention, I'm not sure this is if this is going to get where you wanted to go.
No. And I think what that statement reads like to me is we need to recognize the extraordinary strain and stress that election administrators are under. And it is okay to not be okay. Mm-hmm. It is okay to ask for help. It's okay to get help. If you are feeling the weight of the world, whether you are in a position of public trust or not, it's all okay. There's help available to you. What you cannot do and what you cannot countenance in a case like this is excusing the behavior because somebody's having a bad time. Because of the mis and disinformation that bad actors are putting into the information ecosystem of the world around our elections, it's even more important that everything, both in actuality and in perception, is above board. Our elections are free, fair, safe, and secure. They were in 2020. They will be this time around. There is more transparency than ever. That's a good thing. There are checks and balances built into these systems to ensure that monkey business can't happen. In this woman's case, it appears that she did some monkey business, and now she's going to face the consequences of that. And I'm sorry for her. I don't, even if this wasn't like malice aforethought, that doesn't excuse the behavior. And that's the approach we have to take.
Well, it's wild because it's up to a 3.5 year, it's a felony, first of all, but also it's to the extent of what the sentence could be, it's up to 3.5 years in prison, which is wild because that's the same sentence that you could get for taking a picture of your ballot. Did you know that? Because that happened earlier this week, too. I think it was this week that the story came out that someone from Mequon-Thiensville took a picture and posted it on Facebook of his April ballot, and now he is being faced with charges. These two things do feel different as far as how serious they are. Yeah. The fact that they both are felonies and both could carry the same sentence.
Do you know the history of why it is illegal to take a photo of
your ballot? No, but I have a feeling you do.
It is. I don't know all of the ins and outs, but it basically boils down to, in the old days of like ward bosses, you had to prove that you had voted for the chosen candidate of the machine in order to get your job, keep your job, right? Get the street money that's walking around. And so in order to prevent against machine politics from running our our elections, they basically made it illegal to share your ballot, your marked ballot, with anybody. Because nowadays, if you put that on social media, you could be sending a signal to your boss or an organization you belong to prove that you voted the way they wanted you to, so that they can compensate for you for that. So it's a good thing.
I'm not saying I'm not arguing that we should be able to take pictures of our ballots, but I feel like this happens. If, like, this was like what, 2016, when Justin Timberlake took a picture of his ballot, and everyone was like, "Hey, dude, that's illegal. Please don't do that."
Yeah, this is the Civic Education Hour. Don't take a selfie with your ballot,
and please don't request military ballots and send them to state representatives to prove a point. Because this is the other thing with a military ballot is that I heard you say this morning was the fact that this is, if this is, this was likely going to be found, this would have been found out no matter what. Had it not been sent to one of the representatives who is already on high alert about election security, the tally number of how many military absentee ballots there are historically and how many there would have been had this been like the loophole to try to like
if all of a
sway
sudden,
the election.
Tens of thousands of these were coming in. With all of the alarms on the system would have been blinking red. There's a paper trail. There's a digital trail. That's clearly how they found out that this woman requested those ballots. It would have gotten found out.
And the thing that I even fall prey to now, because we're living in this world of conspiracy theories and bigger picture and who's really behind things instead of just like a singular bad actor, I will totally admit that it crossed my mind of what if there was someone even higher than her that is trying to sow doubt, right? And I'm not saying this is true. I'm just saying this is what happens on both sides of the aisle, right? As far as the bigger plans and who's really behind things and the Illuminati and all this stuff that you can, I'm joking kind of, but you know what I mean? As far as when we start consuming so much information and things can be put out there of, and I even had a glimpse of like, well, what if this is all a plan so that when Ron Johnson says, we'll see if I accept the election results, he can point to things like this. I'm not saying that's true, but I'm saying this is what I even fall prey to, right? And I'm not probably the only one.
That's unfortunate, but it is part of what the bad actors want people to think. They want to question the trust and validity. Mm-hmm. It's part of a playbook that election deniers have kind of perfected in the last couple of years. I've got it here. The Defend Democracy Project put out an election deniers playbook. These are the steps they take, right? Step one, undermine the will of the voters by amplifying false allegations of voting irregularities, fraud, and wild conspiracies. That's how they start. Step two, make false claims about election security and demand changes that limit ballot access. We've seen Republicans try to do that here in Wisconsin. Thankfully, Governor Evers vetoed those.
How many more steps you got? Because we only got 30 seconds before the break.
Stay tuned.
All right, stay tuned. We'll hear the rest of the steps.
There you go.
When we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Joseph Pecky is here, and he looks very confused at our Cabaret soundtrack.
What is that from?
Cabaret.
Okay.
Liza Minnelli. Come on.
Okay. It all makes sense now.
All right.
We're going to have so much fun when you're filming.
I was going to say, Jane's in charge of your bumper music. I hope you know.
She's
should announce that. So when
everything.
I, for next Thursday and Friday, when I am on my way to sunnier pastures, at least for 2 weeks on my honeymoon. Thursday and Friday, Mr. Joseph Pecky will be covering for me. Do you already know what you're going to talk about?
We've got one segment planned out.
Okay.
Our friend Angela Lang is going to come on Friday.
Wonderful. Love
and
her.
And we are going to talk about Wakanda Forever, which comes out next Friday, the 11th. We are, nerds and we own it. And so we're going to talk about it. We'll do it in a non-spoilery way, since the movie will just have come out the night before. But we'll talk about how important Black Panther is in the culture and like the role that superheroes and stories and heroes and villains play in our world. Because I really wanted to find something to talk about other than elections.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk about that too, though.
Yeah. Probably.
Maybe we'll know who won the Pennsylvania Senate race by then.
Oh, gosh. That's okay. I wanted to take it somewhere else, but let's get back to
the election deniers' playbook.
Playbook,
so,
yes, please.
Step one, they want to amplify false allegations. Step two, they make false claims about election security. Step three, they're going to discredit election officials, especially in areas of high voter turnout. And this is particularly why this Milwaukee story is so problematic. It makes it easier for election deniers to to play the role of bad actor and undermine confidence in elections. Step four, train supporters to become election officials and call on supporters to threaten election officials and harass voters. We're seeing in other parts of the country where you have like armed wannabe vigilantes staking out ballot drop boxes. This stuff is disgusting. Step five, after you've laid the predicate, after you've amplified the false information, they find it easier to then reject the results, spread lies about election fraud, and intimidate voters during future elections. That's the playbook. We know this based on what happened in 2020. It's what we need to be aware of and watch out for in the days ahead. I'm really concerned that with how close our elections are, that there is the opportunity for bad actors to exploit the division in the state and in our country. And I guess my final, you know, way to restore your confidence is like, let me assure you, if there was some hidden hand, if there was a conspiracy theory behind all of it, they would not be engineering 50-50 toss-up elections. And that's what we have. And that's what we expect to see happen on Tuesday night.
Well, it's not only that, but it's also, you know, the promo we play on this station a lot is our senior senator, Ron Johnson, on tape admitting that the election was not stolen, because if it had been stolen, why would all the down ballot votes have still gone to Republicans?
Yeah.
Because if anything, I mean, in Wisconsin in 2020, the Republicans in the legislature got more votes.
Well, so the way that Senator Johnson has explained it is, and he's 100% right, is that if you add up the eight congressional candidates who were Republicans who ran in Wisconsin in 2020, they got 50,000 more votes than Donald Trump did. Joe Biden won the state by 30,000 votes. That's the ball game. Maybe we'll play around with the order here. One of the things that we have to understand, that people have to be aware of, is Trump is not gone.
No.
It is not just about, you know, these investigations that are going on. We are seeing reporting nationally in the last 24 hours, Associated Press and others. The Trump team has circled November 14th as the date that he is going to announce that he's running for president again. So I think, listen, whichever Republican strategists were barring the door and preventing him from announcing before the midterms, you know, that must be one, like they must be Brian Kelly sized, because I don't know how else you could have prevented him from making it all about him. Trump. That's what we know.
A little
about
quiet
him
the last couple of weeks.
Right. Now he's doing a bunch of rallies. He's going around to different parts of the country, but that he's, you know, is he coming to Wisconsin? I don't know yet. But what we know is less than a week after the election on Tuesday, he will be announced as a candidate for president. Whether you are a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent, I think everybody understands the danger that Donald Trump poses to our politics and to our American system of government. It is essential that you keep in mind the hold that Donald Trump has had on the Republican Party. He hasn't gone away. Mm-hmm. The only way to defeat Trump and Trumpism is to vote for Democrats. I wish, you know, we had two reasonable political parties that could argue over the issues and figure out how we want to move forward as a country. But Donald Trump is a unique threat to everything we hold dear. And so I would just, you know, encourage, especially those people who have those like anti-Trump Republicans in their families or in their networks, you got to make sure that they understand he's back. He is back. They're actively planning the announcement for 6 days after the election.
But do you really think Trumpism, MAGAism goes away if Trump goes away?
No, I think that's
what we've seen now, right? Like between all of these other, I mean, how many was the final count of election deniers who are on the ballot on Tuesday?
Oh, it's more than 120 across the country. And listen, we, you know, again, Tim Michaels is a creation of Donald Trump. Without Donald Trump's support, Tim Michaels is not the Republican nominee for governor, right? We had Mr. Michaels changing his tune on things like, you know, decertifying the 2020 election. And then we see through reporting that he got a phone call from Mar-a-Lago and was told to cut it out. And now he's back to everything's on the table. Donald Trump holds too much sway over our politics and over Republican politicians. The only way to defeat Trump and Trumpism is to make sure that none of the candidates who have his stamp of approval or who are beholden to him hold positions of public trust after next Tuesday. Because Republican strategists, Republican candidates, like, they are rational actors at the end of the day, right? They want their vision of the country, you know, and that's fine. If they view Donald Trump as a weakness, as a albatross around their neck, then they will walk away from Trumpism. And that is the most important thing that can happen in American politics over the next 5 to 10 years, is to remove the stain of Trumpism from our politics. I know inflation sucks, right? I know
that— which is what I want to talk about when we come back, but we have to go to another break.
Man, these things fly.
Man, they fly. All right, stick with us. This is Ask Us Wisconsin. Which version is this? Is this Ice Ice Baby? Ding 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 ding. It's different. It's totally different songs. Welcome back to Ask Us Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest for an undecided amount of time today is Mr. Joe Zepecki, who will also be here next Thursday and Friday when I guess at that point I will not be in Aruba. I will be at Disney World. So just really trying to melt any problems I'll have away.
Mickey ears picked out yet?
No, I'm not. We're mostly going for the Star Wars, if I'm being honest. That's where
Are you watching Andor?
No.
I talked to you and the lesser half about this on Saturday. Did you not remember that conversation?
He did start Peacekeeper.
Peacemaker.
Whatever.
Wow, we almost had our first spit take of the day.
He's liking that.
Yeah, Andor. Andor is like the best thing on television. Not best Star Wars on television. It is like the best thing on television right now.
All right. This is on Disney.
Disney Plus. I call it the Plus to make it even fancier.
Why is Plus so much more fun to say than Plus?
I don't know.
But it is.
Yeah. Shouts to the Watch podcast. I believe they invented that. Disney Plus.
Oh, all right. Well, back to politics. So
do we have to?
I know. So In the last, I think, 24 hours, two stories have broke on our two Republican candidates in the two big races. So Tim Michaels, this is from Heartland Signal. And basically, when you run for office, and you can correct me because I've never actually, I've worked on Michaels' campaign, but that is the one. This wasn't big boy campaign, so we'll say it that way. But like the amount of when you run, you have to disclose all of your financial.
Yes, you have to do financial disclosure.
Yes.
So that the public knows whether you have conflicts of interest in your exercise of the public trust.
And when he filed, he disclosed 12 different LLCs, and it looks like he might have up to 25.
Oh, we missed a baker's dozen, huh?
Yeah. And basically, it's different LLCs for purchasing multiple different homes, some of which they tried to say were in the, like, purchased for employees, but his wife is actually registered there for different donations that she's made, and all of these different things that point to he did not disclose how many financial entities he actually has. His campaign has denied this.
The business records are what they are.
Yeah. And so the research shows that his ultra wealthy lifestyle he's been living, which really conflicts with the message that he,
the everyman message that he has.
But so there's that. I think we all know this is a very wealthy man.
Yeah. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. Be successful. Be wealthy.
But also be honest about it.
Exactly.
Like,
be honest about it and don't work to further enrich yourself when you should be working for the common good, because most people don't enjoy the lifestyle that you have.
Well, and that's completely without even getting into the fact that he still hasn't disclosed how is he going to divest at all from Michaels Corporation, which makes its money by literally getting government contracts. But additionally, Ron Johnson fought for a tax.
Well, actually, hold on. Well, let's do one more Tim Michaels one, because I think it's a really important bit of reporting that we shouldn't miss, which is, so if they're saying they were buying these homes for, people at the company to live in while they're on jobs or whatever, One thing I think we can be pretty sure of is that none of these homes were purchased for black employees. Because reporting from the Journal Sentinel this week shows that despite the fact this is an 8,000-person company, there's not a single top executive who is black at their company. Those are just the facts, folks.
And they came back, and I think they said they haven't really shown much, but I think what they're claiming is that across what, from what Journal Sentinel looked at, it didn't actually include all of the different divisions, and that their claim is that 17% are either women or people of color across the companies.
They got in trouble with the Illinois EEOC for this, and that was, I think, the first breadcrumb that led people to look into this. So, tough week for Tim Michaels. Not how you want to end your campaign.
But it's also, I mean, and we'll get back to my bigger point in a second, because then additionally, yesterday, or I think even close to, like, yeah, it was at the first thing this morning, that Ron Johnson, who already we've heard about his kids and their private jets, we've talked about him flying to Florida on whatever money he's allowed to use to come back and forth from D.C., but his family, and he also hasn't paid taxes because of this trust.
Since 2013.
So he has been able to put money into a trust that is then not taxed and goes to his children. But last night, or the first thing this morning, it's broke that his family has amassed luxury real estate around the country for similar, like these companies that get made as LLCs in order to shield money that could be taxed either through corporate tax or income tax. And they were, that campaign was not very happy that this broke. But my point in all of this, I don't know if you have initial reactions to, or more details to this story that you want to add.
I'll just say, I'm old enough to remember when John McCain's inability to remember how many houses he owned in 2008 was like front page news and a through line of the 2008 presidential campaign. I'll bet neither Tim Michaels or Ron Johnson could tell you how many homes they own. And frankly, I think somebody should ask him on camera in the last 4 days of this race. See what they say.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you, that, like you said, that you remember when that would have been front page news. And to me now, both of these stories breaking in the last 5 days before the election, 4 days before the election, I don't think it moves the needle.
I think it can.
And really?
I don't want to give away my entire closing argument segment, because I think we'll talk about that. But I think in the closing days of elections, the people who feel like it is their duty to vote, right? Even if they are not super high information consumers of political news, even if they don't love, you know, the candidates, even if they think both political parties are trash, right? And they're like, and they're what's ruining America, they still think it's important to go out and vote. And so they do that. And so in those last couple of days, those types of voters, like, listen, they don't have a 14 or 15 point policy position checklist that they're running down of like, where does this person think the earned income tax credit should be adjusted to? And where does this, that's not how it goes. It comes down to who understands my life and what I'm going through, my hopes and my dreams and my challenges and my fears. And when they are making big, important decisions in places like Washington, D.C. or Madison, who is going to at least have my back and know what I'm going through? And I think where these stories can help illuminate that for those voters who are maybe just checking in, maybe finally going, like, okay, I'm going to sit down and read the newspaper this weekend and try to figure out, you know, which of these folks will have my back. The picture that's being painted of, on the one side, a former public school teacher and a real son of the working class whose parents' union jobs were able to be their ticket to a middle-class lifestyle, running against to multi, many times over millionaires who have the luxury of being able to set up all these trusts and all these LLCs and avoid paying taxes.
Pay people to figure out how they can avoid from paying taxes.
Right. So, like, that to me is the difference. And it's not to – it doesn't suggest that – listen, Packer and Michaels are good companies, right? Like, they've been successful, and nobody should begrudge that. The point we should just understand is that the lived experience of Tim Michaels and Ron Johnson is very different than the lived experience of almost everybody in Wisconsin, right? We're talking about the 0.1 of the top 1%. And again, we're not begrudging them that. We're just saying it's harder for those folks to understand what the families making $40,000 a year and trying to figure it out are going through. It's just a very different experience.
And yet, we've seen such a shift from union blue collar workers who for decades voted Democrat and feel left behind by Democrats and now majority vote red and vote for Republicans. And, you know, more and more polls show this year that Democrats have the people who are voting for Democrats are college educated, white, middle to upper class. And typically, I think, can see through this grift of people who are having a message that talks about values and, you know, religion and working class while simultaneously using the system to enrich themselves. And yet no one, and they're so, and you include Trump in that, right? And so is it this idea that that'll be me someday? That someday I will be that wealthy and then these policies will work for me?
I think it is vibes and cultural, and cultural is complicated, but in terms of vibes, I think it's they view people who have been able to get ahead, as whether or not they're playing by the rules, is like they figured it out. They figured out how to navigate their way through this system that is stacked against folks like me. Man, I wish I could figure that out, right? Boy, I hope my family figures that out. And that's not where you want to be. And listen, and there are ways to, as a Democrat, run a race that cuts through that. And we're seeing that in Ohio with Tim Ryan, right? Where it's some of it is just tonal, right? It's working folks have been getting the short end of the deal for way too long. And you can't, you know, what James Carville would call like faculty lounge, talk your way through the information environment to reach those folks. You got to be as pissed as they are about the fact that our jobs are going to China. You got to be as, you know, mad as hell about the fact that we don't make things in this country like we used to. You got to be ready to, you know, knock over a turnstile over the fact that it takes as long to install a single bike lane in Seattle as it did to get to the damn moon decades ago. And all of that is true, right? But you have to talk about it in a way that makes people understand you do understand this. You are going to go fight and change the system and shake up the system in a way that benefits me and mine, as opposed to just, you know, checking a box and say, well, I've got your union's endorsement, and so you should vote for me. Like, that's – and but so there's ways
like
to there's, do it.
But, like, Fetterman – I mean, like, let's look at – let's think about – this is getting out of Wisconsin politics, but we look at Fetterman and Oz. This is another case where Oz is a multi-millionaire who may or may not actually live in Pennsylvania, and John Fetterman has a long history of – you know, I mean, obviously, I think the biggest thing from what I can tell – I haven't looked at that race as closely as obviously the Wisconsin races, but – right now, the biggest thing for John Fetterman, I think, is the fact that he is recovering from a stroke and has still, regardless of that, gone on camera and done the debates and done the interviews and stuff. But like, he is a working man, and that's why his campaign. But yet there's still going to be the X amount of people who want to vote for Oz, despite him being a carpetbagger, despite him not representing that, like, you know, Rust Belt working class.
Right. I mean, look, Ron Johnson, Dr. Oz, Herschel Walker, Blake Masters. What do all these Senate candidates have in common that are running as Republicans? They're all filthy rich, right? Yeah. For different reasons, right? We got the TV sales guy. We got the plastics manufacturer. We got the star football player. And we got the tech bro in Arizona, okay? And again, good for them. But the fact that, going back to Pennsylvania, one of the things Republicans are trying to hold against John Fetterman is he lived for his parents for a long time. A lot of people in this country can't afford to buy a house or rent. And so the kindness and love of family is what they need to make it month to month. That is not an indictment of your character of your ability. In fact, it is a blaring signal that you understand the struggles of ordinary working people who are trying to buck against this system that has been stacked against them. And so that to me is the difference. Those four, you know, multimillionaires, I'll take the son of the working class in Mandela Barnes, you know, the small town mayor with, you know, full sleeve tattoos in John Fetterman, the pastor in Ralph Warnock, and the astronaut, you know, who after a career in the Navy, like, made his way into the world in Mark Kelly. Give me those folks over the multimillionaires. 7 days a week and twice on Sunday.
And with that, we're going to go to another commercial break. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Stick with us.
If I were a rich man, all day long I bitty bitty bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. Lord, who made the lion and the lamb? You decreed I should be what I am. Would it spoil some vast eternal plan? If I were a wealthy
welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bride. Joe's really liking your music today, Jane.
I'm not sure if he's perplexed or having fun.
Janie needs a red flag law. If you've watched the music video, you know that red flag laws are for examples just like this.
Yes, exactly. Our guest this hour, and probably into next hour, because we just have so much to talk about, and it's Friday, and so why not? Joe Zepecki, veteran campaign strategist, Democrat strategist. So one of the things, this is one of those topics that I think I forget that the average person doesn't really get, in that how close we are to the legislature having a supermajority, which means it wouldn't really matter if Tony Evers wins. And also, even if Michaels wins, I keep joking. I was like, who do you think, if Michaels wins and there's a supermajority, who do you think a year from now he's going to say is a better boss, his brother or Robin Voss?
Oh, that's good. That, I see what she did there. That's very good.
Because like that, if that happens, if they get a supermajority, Robin Voss is basically our governor.
Yeah. I mean, I think he would probably choose his boss because Robin Voss would probably make him come to work more.
Is
my smart alecky response?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so let's just break this down for a second. So, you know, a lot of us talk about gerrymandering a lot. We got our redistricting maps for the next 10 years are worse than they were somehow the last 10 years. And so we are on the precipice of only a couple seats in both the Assembly and the State Senate of them having a supermajority, despite every indication that our statewide elections are 50-50.
So I think the way to talk about this, because most of us remember our civics lessons.
Do we?
Is at the federal level, we'll start there, right? That the president can veto a law and then the Senate can override the veto.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's 100 senators, the math is easier,
yeah.
Right? So if you have 67 senators who disagree with a president's veto, it becomes law anyways. That same principle is embedded within the Wisconsin system of government, that if both houses of the state legislature by a 2/3 majority disagree with a governor's veto, then whatever they sent to his desk becomes law anyways. Now, what Kristen is referring to is even though we are a 50-50 state, even though Democrats routinely get hundreds of thousands more votes for state legislature, like if you add up all the individual races, Republicans have big majorities in both houses, many people will tell you, due to the way the lines are drawn, right? And so one of the things that we have to make sure people understand is the only races on your ballot on Tuesday are not just for governor and U.S. Senate. We have other statewide offices, all of our constitutional offices, attorney general, treasurer, secretary of state. There are also congressional races. There are also state legislative races. Not every ballot will have a state Senate race.
17
right? Half of them go in midterms, half of them go in presidential years. But every district, you will have a state representative or assembly representative. You have to do your homework. You have to stay down the ballot, because if you don't, what happens is your voice doesn't matter as much as your neighbors who might be voting the other way for the state assembly candidate. And I think the reality of the environment is that the state Senate, will probably get to that two-thirds majority. I do not believe that the assembly will get to the two-thirds. But we have to make sure of that. And the way to make sure of that is to vote for your local Democrat running for state representative. And I will say one other thing. I don't like to, you know, say it's all about the lines.
No.
Nothing is all about the lines, right? It's about who shows up and who votes. And one of the things that jumped out at me in this last Marquette Law School poll was the gender gap. Mm-hmm. That in the wake of the Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade and 50 years of freedom for women to make their own healthcare decisions in consultation with their family, their doctor, maybe their pastor or priest, that in the wake of that, in the race for governor, there is a 39-point gender gap favoring Tony Evers. In the U.S. Senate race, there is a 36-point gender gap favoring Mandela Barnes. So, no pressure, ladies, but you might have to save us all, because the typical makeup of the statewide electorate is 53% female, 47% male. If that number changes even just a little bit to 54, 54.5, or 55% female, and someone has told me the future is female, mm-hmm. if that happens, that doesn't just change the calculus at the statewide level. It also means Democrats can win state assembly races that maybe they didn't think they could. And so you got to stay down the ballot. You got to understand that every vote matters, not just in the statewide races, but also at the legislative level.
Well, and we've tried, as much as we could on this show, we've had a lot of down ballot candidates on. And we invited a lot of Republican candidates on as well. None of them came. But truly, I've been so wildly impressed with the people we've interviewed that are running for either assembly or state senate. And one, I think the courage to run in this environment, for any race, even is one thing. But it's also so many of them are running on what I think is what we all want. It's gets reflected in the Marquette Law School poll that came out yesterday. The number two thing after inflation is public schools.
Yeah.
And you see that with how many referendums. It will be really 80. Interesting to see how, of the 80 referendums, how many of them pass because people know that their schools are not getting the funding that they need. And we get out of school choice because in most parts of Wisconsin, you get out of Southeast Wisconsin, and there is not the population density to have school choice in the way that we right. do down here. And there's already public schools that are closing and kids needing to get bused further and further to even because there's just not enough people. And so this is a big deal. And they're talking about how expensive healthcare is, how expensive like trying to get broadband. It's all these like very common sense things that they're talking about. It's not this like woke, go broke, all those, and like they yeah. want to get painted like that. But in talking to them, it's very matter of fact, kitchen table issues, as the cliche goes, of what they're talking about. And I'm hoping that in the amount of doors that they've knocked and the conversations that they've had, that comes across, and that we can, no matter what happens on Tuesday, those conversations continue to happen.
Same. How much time do we have?
We only have a minute, so you gotta hold on.
So I got
you got 1 minute. Okay.
Yeah. So I think the national illustration of this is that today, House Republicans are laying out a 1,000-page roadmap to investigate the Biden administration and potentially impeach him. For what? We don't know, but they've got a roadmap. 1,000 pages. Not a single one of those 1,000 pages has anything to do with lowering the cost of gasoline, lowering the cost of groceries, lowering the cost of prescription drugs. You know who has a plan to do all of those things? Democrats do. From windfall profits taxes on big oil companies, sorry, I know we're out of town.
We're out of time. But you're going to stay here.
Yes.
We got a break for the top of the hour news. Joe Zepecki will still be here when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, our guest who's still here. Joe Zepecki.
Hey, surprise. You know what? I just decided, based on Jane's music cue there, what I'm going to do this weekend.
Okay.
I'm going to rewatch all of Ted Lasso. That is the Lumineers, is it not?
Yes.
The only other Lumineers song I've ever heard was in the Ted Lasso show, and I don't know when
Really? Lumineers are great.
I don't get out a lot.
Okay.
Almost got her again. Almost two spit
takes. She's a generous laugher. Yeah. That's why I hired her.
That's why I've always liked that about you, Brooke. Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't know when we're getting Ted season three, but if you want to have your faith in humanity restored, watch Ted Lasso.
I agree.
That's a really good point, Joe. It is. It just will make you feel better.
It is a very good show. And is there any other show that makes you feel as good as that show? I'm trying to think. That's currently... Parks and Rec. I mean, but that's, it's different. Like, the other comedies are different than how that just makes you feel.
Yeah. I'm going to have to check out Blockbuster on Netflix. I worked at Blockbuster.
What's Blockbuster on Netflix?
It's a sitcom about the last Blockbuster video store. And I proudly worked at the Blockbuster video in Hales Corners, Wisconsin for years when I was in high school.
What were the perks?
The free movies, and you could see them before they came out.
Oh.
You got five a week, and the movies would come in on Tuesday, but they wouldn't be available until Thursday or Friday. So you could take, you know, the new releases home and watch them so that you could speak about them authoritatively to customers who wanted
to give
a
recommendation. Yeah. What we're going to get back to the election. Just stick with us.
This is the
point of this show. We balance. We balance the fun, lighthearted stuff with the deep analysis of what's happening in our state. What was the most influential movie you saw that impacted your life while working at Blockbuster?
Oh, God. That's not a fair question.
Why? Because there's too many?
Impactful.
I don't know.
I was a 16, 17.
It doesn't have to be that, it was groundbreaking material, but just something that you feel like.
Here's what I could share. Here's what I will share.
Okay.
The movie I saw the most because I worked at Blockbuster was Joe Dirt.
Really?
Because we would do inventory monthly, and that is a great movie to listen to. So if you're old enough to remember a Blockbuster, I know not everybody in the studio today is, they had the like hanging down TV monitors, and they would run like the on a loop the, you know, the Blockbuster sales pitches, right? But then you could also put a movie on. So when we would be there until like 3 a.m. doing inventory, you could put a movie on and just listen to it while you were literally scanning all of the physical media. And Joe Dirt, starring David Spade, is a fantastic listening movie. I wish Brian Kelly were listening right now, because I know that man has seen Joe Dirt, and I bet he loves Joe Dirt.
I can see him over your shoulder. I don't think he is listening because he has not reacted to that comment. But that's a good one. I'm trying to think. My rotation in high school of movies, I did not work at a Blockbuster, but I did have a VHS player in my room. Ooh. And so while cleaning my room or whatever, I always had something on.
Did you take a private jet to and from school?
I know.
Dang, girl.
I don't think I had a... Did I have a phone in my room?
What?
I might have even had a phone in my room.
Wow. I had the long cord in the hallway that you had to drag it in.
But it was a rotation of Zoolander, Dazed and Confused, Super Troopers. I think it was those three.
Okay.
So maybe not shocking that humor.
Shawshank Redemption, my freshman year in college. I think I watched that 100 times.
Wow.
Yeah. Get busy living or get busy dying. And this has been the Old Timers Hour on As Goes Wisconsin.
All right. Well, let's rein it back in. So I saw this question, this article from Craig Gilbert on Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he said there's six questions the November 8th election will answer about Wisconsin politics.
Hit me. Let's see if Craig and I agree.
Yeah, let's see what
them.
You have to say. So, how will the political map change?
The biggest change to the state in the last 10 years has been the growth of Dane County at the expense of everywhere else. It's the one part of the state that's growing. Mm-hmm. I think, so if you do like a heat map for Democratic performance, that part of the state is going to get even bluer. And the question is, how much redder would the rest of the state, except for southeastern Wisconsin, have to get to offset the Democratic performance growth in Dane County? So that to me is right. It's not a question of like red counties flipping blue or blue flipping yellow. It's given the population growth, given the increase in Democratic performance, how much bluer can the big blue machine get? That's the map question.
Because it's that, but it's also that the suburbs, going into this election is what are the suburbs doing?
Yep.
As far as the suburbs of Milwaukee, which have historically, the wow counties, been very red. And I mean, I love to point this out in that in 2020, the third the county with the third most amount of Democratic votes was Waukesha County.
It typically is.
And, you know, the county with the most Republican votes after Waukesha County was Milwaukee County, because this is just where the biggest population is. All right. Can turnout get any higher?
Yes. And it just might. I mean, yeah. I think there's like 650,000 votes have already been cast between mail-in ballots and absentee in person. In 2018, we broke a midterm record mm-hmm. for turnout. I think we might do it again. I don't think it's going to be by a lot. Like 3.1 million votes is about what was cast in the 2020 mm-hmm. presidential. 2.8 million is what was cast in the 2018 midterm. I would guess we'll be in the 2.75 to 2.9 range.
Which is a lot.
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of
votes. And I would say anecdotally, of friends who have already voted and voted early, most of them are reporting that when they get there, there's already a line, wow. which I think is interesting.
Yeah. So like, here's the shift. So for example, in the 2014 midterms, Republicans won Waukesha County by 92,766 votes in the race for governor. In 2018, Democrats did 26,000 votes better. That's about what Tony Evers' margin was, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's 50-50, so it can all be determinative. But that, to me, is the big question, is the blue dot, how big does it get, and is there enough Republican growth, or are there enough Trump voters who come out to offset what Dane County's going to do?
Which party has a bigger gender problem?
I think Republicans do. They are hemorrhaging women voters because they don't care if women hemorrhage due to a complicated pregnancy and die out on the floor. I mean, like, that's, I hate to be that gruesome about it, but that's kind of the drill.
We're going to keep going.
I'll just break down the gender gap. So when I say a 39-point gender gap in the governor's race, that doesn't mean that, you know, among men it's tied and women are voting 39 points more for. That is like, Republicans have a 15-point edge among men, and then Democrats have a 22-point edge. I don't think I did that math wrong. Right, but you add those two together, that's where you get the 39, almost 40-point gender gap.
Yeah.
So based on the numbers, the gender gap problem is worse for Republicans. They need to do much better with men. Democrats have a little bit of an advantage baked in based on how well we're doing among women.
This is my naivete showing, but what are the exit poll? Like, what demographics will we get out of Tuesday?
We'll get gender. I got exit polled walking out of my early vote location.
Did you?
I thought I'd done everything in American politics, folks. I had never been exit polled until last week when I went to cast my early vote.
All right.
Do
we get racial?
Yep.
For midterms, we get everything that we'd normally get for presidential years as well. Okay.
Yeah. I did it right after I wished my mother a happy birthday, and I voted like my mother was watching, and I think everyone should do that, especially this time.
All right. There you go. That's good advice. All right. Will Wisconsin voters vote the same way for governor and senator?
I think so. Okay. It is certainly possible that we will not, but it has been a very long time since we've done that. I think the last time was 1994, which was one of the elections that Herb Kohl and Tommy Thompson were both reelected. Herb Kohl served in the United States Senate for a long time. Tommy Thompson was elected four times as a Republican governor of Wisconsin. I think it's unlikely. But again, when these margins are so thin, right, that if 50,000 votes can swing it, and because of the presence of Jan Begelinger as an independent candidate in the race for governor, it is certainly possible. I don't think it's likely. I think a lot of our politics tends to be pretty national, and these are all going to fall one way or the other at the end, but it is certainly possible.
This is interesting to me because we had Charles Franklin on for the first time ever yesterday.
Professor Franklin, I had him for a class.
Did you? College, yeah. Was he lovely?
Sure. Yeah, let's go with that.
I thought he was lovely yesterday.
He's a charming guy.
I really didn't have him for a professor, so he never had to grade my papers. But will the polls be right?
No.
Why?
I just don't buy that they've fixed the problems from 2020. There was a poll in the days before the 2020 election that showed Joe Biden was going to win Wisconsin by 18 points.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't get it right in 2016. They were a little bit better in 2018, but like, there is a problem with response bias, with how people live, with young people. And what you cannot model for is what the electorate is going to look like. And we've never had an electorate, you know, an election months after Roe v. Wade was stripped away. Like, I just don't, you don't, there's no way to account for that. And so I don't believe the polls. I believe in terms that they're close, but I don't like the fact that Ron Johnson's up too. Like, I don't buy it.
But, and this is where do the polls hurt more than they help?
Yes. I think we should, I understand free speech. I want people to be able to have free speech, but I really think one of the things that we could do that would like make political coverage more impactful for people and therefore make the, you know, public discourse better would be if we just said 2-3 weeks out from elections, no more polling.
Yeah.
Right. Like, because it,
like, you can do internal polling, but right, no publishing the polls. Right. Like, it drives so much
coverage is about who's up, who's down. And then it becomes more like a,
well, for those of us who have a 3-hour show, sometimes it helps to have stuff to talk about.
Sure. But you know what I'm saying? I think your listeners do too. Like, we should be talking about why we should vote for candidates and what the candidates' different priorities should be, and not be having a long discourse about momentum and who's up and who's down. And
because I saw something from Joy Reid, granted this is on MSNBC, but as far as it's a tactic sometimes to flood the news cycles with polls that persuade people to think, well, this is why should I even vote?
Totally.
Republicans are going to win. Why should I even vote? Democrats are going to win. And so that in and of itself is a way to persuade or dissuade someone from even showing up, because they're like, well, throw my hands up. What does it matter? This is a foregone conclusion.
It feeds into that. My vote doesn't matter. It does matter. Wisconsin elections are really close. Your vote matters. Go vote.
It does matter. All right. We got to take one more break before we let you go. But when we come back, I want to talk to you about life will go on after Tuesday, no matter what happens. And so for those of us who are very invested in the issues that we care about, what do we do then? All right. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Stay with us. Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Hour and a half. This is almost as long as you were here when you helped me do this show the first week it was on, which was the full 2 hours.
Seems like a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
Is that August 1?
That was the first week of July.
Okay.
This show started July 5th. I think you were on here July 6th. It feels like a long time ago. This is Joe Zepecki, by the way, if you're just tuning in.
And, hey, everybody. My reputation doesn't precede me with all of your listeners.
I know, right? All 12 of them.
Including Donald, who called, by the way.
What did Donald have to say?
Donald was having trouble with his reception. He got it figured out. But the break that you did about the acquisition of extra houses for a couple of people who are running for office in Wisconsin, he thought that was tremendously valuable information, and you should keep up the good work.
Okay. Thanks, Donald.
We love all 12 of those listeners, though, don't we?
We do. We really do. So I think for young people, I've heard this from a couple different Brooks age, 22, 23 year olds who have doubts on whether or not they will stay in Wisconsin if Michaels wins or XYZ, because a lot is on the line. I am not one of those people. If you can't tell, I am pretty bought in on Wisconsin. I've made a whole life brand out of it. And so I am sticking around no matter what happens on Tuesday. I'd imagine you are also sticking around no matter what happens on Tuesday.
Correct.
And so let's say there is a red wave. Let's say Michaels wins. Let's say Ron Johnson wins. Let's say there is a Republican supermajority in the state legislature. For those of us who are very committed to issues across the board when it comes to climate and environment and schools and reproductive health and all of these things that feel threatened right now, and just the state of Wisconsin being a great place to live, where do we go from there?
The $64,000 question. I'm going to stay. And I'm going to stay in the fight, I actually, you caught me a little unawares because I'm not sure I want to use the word fight. because we're seeing violence in our politics in ways that we haven't in a long time. You know, nobody around this table is old enough to remember the 60s when political leaders and social movement leaders were struck down in the primes of their careers with regularity. But we are seeing very, very scary things happen, like an attempted assassination of the Speaker of the House about a week ago. We see in our rhetoric people getting way, way out over their skis. And so what I will say is our campaigns have almost gotten like too finely dialed in to knowing what moves human emotions and therefore voter behavior. It is not true that Ron Johnson is a terrible person. It is not true that Mandela Barnes hates America. Both of those gentlemen, for example, and I'm just going to use that example because it's top of mind for me. They have very different worldviews and very different ideas about how to strengthen this country, but they both want to strengthen this country. And that's one of the nuances that gets lost in our debates. And what I'm here to tell you is those debates matter. And for every step forward we've taken as a country, as a people, there have always been setbacks along the way, right? Whether it's Obama saying the moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice, right? Whether it is seeing a country that has never lived up to its founding ideals, and that's part of the point, right? I think I've talked about this on the show before, where my favorite sort of phrase of the founding documents is to form a more perfect union. More perfect, what is that? It's unattainable. You can always do better. The world changes, people change, the issues change, the challenges change. And we are living in a time where it feels like we need to reckon with a lot of choices that were made in the past when it came to the way our economy was set up and businesses were set up and systems were established and the rules of the road for the world, right? Like post-World War II, were established. We're coming to a moment of reckoning, right? And hopefully the American idea and the American experiment is up to the task of being equal to the moment to make sure we pass that reckoning and we do it in a way that is productive and peaceful and leads to a better future. And even though we might lose it all next Tuesday or we might win it all, either way, the fight's not over, right? And like part of why I am so passionate about politics and public service and American government and the systems within which we operate is because they do yield progress, right? I know it is terrifying for young people to think about what's ahead of them, but young people today are better suited than they were 20 years ago or 40 years ago or 60 years ago, right? People of color, LGBTQ plus individuals, like they see what's happening and they have every reason to be scared, to be afraid of what the future holds. And I would just remind them that if you look 20, 40, 60 years in the past, we have made progress. We are getting there, but we'll never get there. We'll never continue that progress and that forward march through history if we think the solution to losing an election is to stick our head in the sands or to quit on the process or to move to Canada or a blue state. That's just not how this works, folks. We have to stay engaged. And if we do that, we're going to keep getting there. It's really hard in today's information environment to like separate the right now, right this very second in front of my face from the sweep of history, but we have to try. And that's where I hope programs like this can do that. It can lead to deeper conversations, deeper understanding, and we can all, figure out the way forward together, even if we fight like cats and dogs over the issue set and over what the solutions are. But nothing, like, I'm here to tell you, as somebody who's worked on a lot of campaigns, nothing is as bad as the politicians want you to believe, and nothing is as good as the other side of the politicians want you to believe. The truth lies somewhere in the middle. It's a gray, gray world, and you can be a part of, moving that gray world a little closer to justice. So stay locked in. Don't opt out.
Well, you like timed that perfectly because now we have to go to another break and I'm going to let you go. But thank you so much for spending your Friday morning with us, afternoon, whatever it is right now. I'm very grateful that you'll be here next Thursday and Friday to cover for me while I am taking a break. Joseph Pecky, thank you for all that you do. Thank you for being my friend. And we'll see you next time.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. We're taking a break. We'll be back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Time's wrong.